most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Studio City, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. Now, this show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guest will provide advice, tips, or resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. Our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. If you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, you are already on the LA Talk Radio website if you are listening to us live. So what you do is you go to the top of the page. There are links up there, and you click the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. You scroll down and look for the graph of our show, Question Reality, and you click the link. And this will take you directly to our archive page where you can view the list of all of our past guests. And our shows, very exciting, are also available for download on iTunes. Every single show is downloaded, so you can listen to them or send an email to your friends and tell them to check the show out under the podcast section. And you go to the podcast section and you type in Question Reality Radio in the search box, and that will take you directly to our shows. Now, if you want to find out about our future guests, who's going to be on next week, next month, almost next year, because we're booked until September, you want to go to the official Question Reality website, and that address is questionrealityshow.com, questionrealityshow.com. Now, I want you to get your pen and paper out because you need to take notes, everybody. We have a very esteemed, distinguished, sophisticated, elegant person as a guest today. I feel a little intimidated having her on the show. I had to really think carefully about the questions I was going to ask her because I thought, oh my God, is she going to think I'm a moron asking these simple questions? But you know, our show is all about simple. We just give career advice, tips, resource information. I'm not going to ask her how you win the Nobel or Pulitzer Prize, but she could probably answer that immediately without hesitating or going to look it up on the internet. She wouldn't even have to Google it. Her name is Karen Malpede, and she is a playwright, a director, and a peace activist. And if you want to check out her website right now while we have her on the line, let me give you that address. It's theater3collaborative.org. Theater3collaborative.org, and that's spelled theater3collaborative.org. And I got to remember to ask her the difference between some people in theater spell it theatre and then some theater. And I have been meaning to ask that question my whole entire life, and I actually never got around to it. I completely have forgotten to do that. And I was involved in theater for many, many years, and I never asked anybody. So we're going to ask her today. I hope I remember and don't forget it again. Now, she was referred to us by some of our past guests, the wonderful playwright Brad Mays and Lorenda Starfelt. And she is going to be working with them on an upcoming play. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about Karen. Karen Malpede, her bio was so extensive. I'm like, oh, my God, I need to just get one paragraph out of this, one paragraph. But I just didn't know where to stop because there's so much. But basically, she's a co-founder of the Theater 3 Collaborative. She's an author of 16 plays produced in the United States, Europe, and Australia, as well as short fiction and essays and articles on theater and human rights. Her newest play, Another Life, will be staged at John Jay College and the Irondale Theater Center in New York this fall under her direction. And she has an excerpt which is was published in the Kenyon Review in the fall of 2010. She directed a staged reading at Dixon Place on September the 21st of that. And Prophecy premiered in London in 2008, and Karen directed the New York premiere in 2010. She's a very busy lady. When I continue on, you're going to go, oh my God, how does this woman do it? She must be exhausted from day to night. She's now Prophecy is scheduled for production in LA under the direction of Brad Mace, who was our guest, next season. So Prophecy will also be published along with six other anti-war plays by prominent playwrights in the anthology Acts of War, Iraq and Afghanistan in seven plays. Northwestern University Press, I think it's this month. Now, Malpede, people like to call her Malpede, but Karen has written the introduction to this anthology, so that should be exciting. She writes. And she has previously directed her own scripts, which are I Will Bear Witness, which was classic stage theater at the New Inn Theater, and London English Theater, Theater Berlin, The Beekeeper's Daughter. Oh, my God, there's so many. My God, there are so many. I could go on for hours and hours, but we really want to get down to it. She's just done so, so much. So without further ado, let's talk to Karen and let's let her tell you all of the wonderful things that she has done and is doing today for our world. Karen, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
My God, I can barely hear you, Karen. Speak
humbled
up, girl.
Indeed.
Oh, my God. You know, when I look at this, I think, what is going on? How does one achieve all of the things that you have done in your life? It's like you've done more than, I'd say, 20 people in this world could possibly have done with their lives, like three times over. And I just wonder how do you get that motivation to do all of that? What motivates you to continually do all of the things that you do?
I've been very lucky, and the particular way that I've been very lucky is with the people I've known, mentors who were older than I by 20 or 30 or 40 years, and colleagues who are around my age, who led the way. Julian Beck and Judith Molina of the Living Theater, Joe Chaykin of the Open Theater. We were just at dinner talking about Grace Paley. People I've worked intimately with and often been arrested with on peace actions and nonviolent civil disobedience actions. And, you know, that's just sort of the way we lived, where we did our work and we did our private writing work and tried to make it public as well as we could, and we did our work in the world at the same time. And so, you know, I've been lucky. I've been lucky, and I've been also lucky to live a long time, which helps. So, yes.
My God. Well, it goes on and on. But let's start way back, Karen, in the beginning. So what did you want to do? From your earliest memories, what did you want to be when you grew up? What profession did you
I wanted
see?
To be a writer.
You did?
Always. There was never, ever a question. And sometimes I think, well, how foolish. You could have been a psychiatrist or somebody with a salary of any sort. But it was never a question. It was never a question for me. And I have a twin brother who actually runs the Los Angeles Poverty Department Theater in L.A. I'm in New York, but he's in L.A. And my daughter's in L.A. too, working in film in special effects. But anyway, my brother said to me once the same question, what would you like to be when you grow up? We were kids. And I said, I'd like to write poetic plays. I was enamored at that moment of Yeats and George Bernard Shaw and the writers Singh and the writers who created the Abbey Theater, including Augusta Gregory, who was a woman. And he said, well, why don't you do that? And I said, well, I can't do that. I'm a woman. You know, again, being lucky, I was a woman in the 60s and 70s and 80s, a young woman, and that was the feminist movement. And what the feminist movement announced and what we announced to ourselves at some considerable struggle, actually, was that we were people. We weren't girls, chicks, wives. We were all of those things, too, but we were also humans. And guess what? We could write if we wanted to. And so, again, on the wave of so many women writers, some 10 years older, 20 years older, 30 years older, and lots of them my age, we created a women's renaissance in the arts. And instead of finding one woman playwright, you would find 20 or 30, and now you would find hundreds. So luck and timing have something to do with it, and community has a lot to do with it.
Well, let me ask you, what would you say, because a lot of people struggle with what they want to do. They may think they want to do something, but then something is very similar, which is another profession. Lots of things go through your mind when you're trying to figure out what you want to do. Not everyone is as lucky as you and knows what they want to do. So say a person thinks, well, maybe I do want to be a playwright, but maybe I could be an actor, or maybe I should be a director. What encompasses the mind of someone who wants to be a playwright that you would say, you know what, you think you want to be this, this, and this, but you actually should pursue a career as a playwright? What goes through the mind that would trigger you to know that that person should pursue a career as a playwright?
Well, you know, most of us multitask. So I direct and write. I started as a writer, and then I started directing. I teach. It's always good to have a day job. So I don't think it's so important to make the choice. Of course, if you're going to be a writer, you have to write. And when I teach writing, which I do, I try to tell my students that the most important thing to do is to write every day. Sometimes you don't write every day because you've just finished a play, which is sort of my situation now. But I write something every day. And so if you're not willing to do that, or you don't want to do that, or you can't do that, the first thing, of course, is to try. And the second thing, because if you don't write, you know, people have a strange idea that inspiration takes care of everything. But actually, hard work is what takes care of everything.
Right.
And if you work hard, then you do get the scene that comes out totally perfectly after, you know, years or months of trying to struggle. So I think the first thing is persistence and discipline. The next thing, I think, is having something that you really want to say. And I don't mean just one thing, but I mean a worldview, some kind of vision of life on Earth that you want to share with people. And you may not even be able to tell yourself what that vision is, because a vision of life on Earth is a pretty complex thing. But you know there's something that you want to say, and so you begin to try to say it. I think for playwrights, having some sense of dramatic action is key. And sometimes you get that by being an actor or a director or just loving plays and film. But you notice that plays and film, too, are very compressed forms. They take place in a short amount of time, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, an hour and a half, something like that. And in that short amount of time, people have to change. And that feeling of how people change, and how people change is that they make choices, same way they change in life. You're faced with an event, and you have to make a choice about it. The simplest way, and I sometimes say to my students, put your character in a burning house and see what they save, and then you'll know who they are. Put your character in any heightened situation and watch what they do. what choice they make. And that will give you a clue about who they are and also what it is you wish to say.
That sounds very, you know, that makes total sense, because you really have to, as a writer, you got to think about, I would imagine, I'm, you know, not a playwright or a screenwriter, but I would imagine that you actually have to think about a situation and want to actually write about it, not just think about it, because a lot of people can sit and think, or maybe you call it fantasy, but a lot of people can think about a lot of situations or scenarios, like what if this happened or what if that happened, but it's the actual putting it to paper and having the discipline to do that day after day after day and wanting to make it work so bad that would actually take you to the level of actually calling yourself a writer.
I say all the time, I have to do an awfully lot of bad writing before I get to what I start saving. I mean, my computer is littered. Now we can save everything, of course. My computer is littered with stuff. And then it clicks in. It clicks in at a certain point. I mean, for a long time you're in the dark, or I'm usually in the dark for a long time, and I have this sort of, sometimes I get a vision of a play, I think, oh, that's what I want to write, that's perfect, I know the whole thing, great. And then I go to my desk the next morning and I've forgotten it all, and I'm in a complete, you know, completely confused and nowhere. And then I start writing, and I usually start writing badly. But that, I think, is also important. I'm the kind of writer who writes myself into something, into the story, into the characters. At a certain moment, your characters start speaking to you, and then you become, instead of the person tilling the soil and turning over rocks and breaking through roots and stuff like that, you become the channel, and you start to be sort of wildly attuned and listening to what your characters are saying to you, and then it's a whole different ballgame, and you're on, if you will. You're the servant of this story, of this creation. But you don't get there, or at least I don't get there, without a lot of banging my head against the wall, and as I say, just plain writing badly for a long time. That's okay. It's okay to do that. I don't know any other way to do it. I'm sure there are other people who do, but I'm not so sure, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Just write. You just have to write. I have come across, I don't know if it's because it's L.A., but I've come across people who have come to me, and because I produce, a lot of short films and stuff, and I've had people come to me, and they are first time, and I like working with first time screenwriters. It's more exciting to me, but I have had them come to me with a script, and it's their very first time writing it. They wrote it, it's done, and they send it right on over to me, and I'm like, okay. And you look at it, you go, okay, well, you need to do this and this and this, and not being it's very hard being a producer and getting scripts, and obviously not being a playwright or a screenwriter, you can't give them the technical advice that they need to do what they need to do, but you just read and go, that ain't right. What the hell happened up in here? That shit is just bad. So what do you do? I mean, how do you tell somebody, what do you do?
Well, I mean, I try not to be in that situation. I have a theater, but we're not a producing theater. We produce only work that we generate. So when people send me a script, I can always easily say, I'm sorry, we produce the work that we generate, and we don't accept, submissions. On the other hand, I teach writing. So when I teach writing, I work very specifically with the writers, and we read out loud. Each writer reads their scene or their chapter out loud every week, and I critique very specifically, moment to moment, word by word sometimes. And by critique, I mean in a positive way, not to annihilate the writer. My thought is that every writer has their own voice, and I don't want to teach writers to write like I do, but I do want to teach writers or help writers to be better writers in their own voice. So I critique very, very carefully and very specifically, and give notes that the writer can use. And I tell my students over and over, don't do it because I say to do it. Do it only if it makes sense to you. And not only that it makes sense to you, but you take the note and you say, ah, I can really do something with that. I understand that note. I can make it better. You know, she gave me one sort of suggestion, but I can do five things with that suggestion. So one of the things I try to do is encourage people to learn their own voice, feel their own voice, and work with that and make that better. But that's labor intensive. It takes a long time. Writing takes a long time. And that's the way I work. So I don't like to work from the outside with anybody. I really like to work from the inside, where they're at. I guess if you're, you know, since this is a program that people are looking for career advice, I would say just in general, find the people whose work you love and go and work with them. Apprentice yourself to them. Go and scrub the toilet. Go and lick the stamps. Go and do the email blasts. Go and be around the people whose work you love. Everybody needs help. And of course, the best way to ingratiate yourself with any artist is to come up and say, I love your work. I just love your work. And they will embrace you and take you in. And then you become an apprentice, but not so that you can copy their work, but so you can see what they do and how they work. And then when you're ready, you go off on your own. And you start your own theater, you start writing your own plays, you do your own thing, you know. But it's very important, I think, for young people, especially young people, to throw themselves into the work that they love and learn from that. And it might be Shakespeare. You know, you might love Shakespeare, and then you go study Shakespeare, which most of us do at a certain point, because most of us do love Shakespeare, or the Greeks, or whoever you love. But That's the first step. If you can't love other people's work, you won't be able to love your own. And it's right. Very important to love your own work, you know, but you have to get there.
You have to actually put the pen to the paper, so to speak.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk the difference between playwright, screenwriter. How does one make a decision? I mean, a writer is a writer is a writer, but what makes you, say you started out as a playwright and you go, okay, I've written a couple of plays, but you know, my eyes are heading towards the West and I want to walk the red carpet. I think I want to be a screenwriter. How do you know that, I mean, other than those superficial, shallow things, how do you know you want to be a screenwriter rather than a playwright?
Well, you know, screenwriting, although there are some marvelous language scripts, screenwriting is really a director's, I mean, the film is really a director's medium. Theater is a playwright's medium. And many directors in film write their own plays and their own screenplays, and many playwrights direct their own plays. But I think part of it is language what fascinates you, because language is what works in the theater. It's visual, it's imagistic, it's character driven. What works in film is image, the visual image, which, you know, doesn't need language because you do it in all different ways. So that's one distinction. I've never had a play of mine made into a film, but once I was commissioned to write a film script about Emily Dickinson, which a lot of people liked and got very close to being made, but you know this story, right? And the other time I was commissioned to turn a play of mine into a film, and that's still kind of in play in Europe, a play called The Beekeeper's Daughter, which is now called End of the Century. One of the things I noticed about both of those experiences is that and this brings us to the book, which I do want to talk about, but that it's very easy to sort of throw gratuitous violence into the screen because it's so untrue. You know, you can explode anybody's head, you can drive a car off a cliff, you can have massacres, and, you know, it's not true. You're not doing that to real people. real people are dying right now in real wars, but not on the screen. So one of the things that, sort of gives me pause about screenwriting, although I love film, by the way, and I, you know, I'm not, this is in no way an anti-film statement, but and I just saw a wonderful film, Amiral, Julian Schnabel's film, which I think is really terrific. But it's easy to do gratuitous violence on film, and it's not so easy on the stage. It's also pretend on the stage. You have a sword fight on the stage, and everybody knows it's a sword fight. So basically, what I'm interested in and what I tried to document in the book Acts of War are seven plays that allow us to look at the violence in our world from a very human perspective. And most of those plays, including my play Prophecy, the violence does not appear on the stage at all. And what you have are characters who are carrying the results of violence that they've experienced or in many cases have perpetrated. And it's that experience of carrying the violence that becomes moving and interesting, not gratuitous sort of car chases and heads being lopped off, if you know what I mean.
I understand.
You know, whether it's
your desire for sensationalism has to be more restrained when you do theater. That's what I would say. So that people who want to know that's the difference. Yeah. You got to be able to be a little bit more restrained.
Also that you in theater you're working with language, and in film you're working with visual image.
I love that. That was beautifully put.
You know,
very succinct, and I couldn't have said it better. That was excellent. Now, most people have heard how hard it is to make it in the world of theater as an actor. How hard is it to make it as a playwright? Is it equally as hard, or is it a little different?
No, it's impossible. it's really, we just got a grant to bring the new play, Another Life, to Kosovo. Kosovo, if you know, is one of the poorer republics in Europe. It used to be part of the former Yugoslavia. It was then part of Serbia. It broke off 10 years ago in a war. And it's a very poor, very tiny little country. It has a national theater that's funded by the state. And that theater is endowed with money. We're going there on an exchange program. We're going to do the new play at a festival that this national theater is producing. Now, we're the richest country that the world has ever known. And the last time you heard a president say the word arts funding was probably many, many presidents ago. We're talking about cutting education funds and Medicare and Medicaid funds. Arts is so far down on the list that, you know, it's not even mentioned, and when it is mentioned, it becomes a very contentious issue because artists are hard to control. So basically, we live in a country that doesn't value its artists, and it doesn't fund its theaters, certainly not its small independent theaters. So it's a struggle for everyone. It's very difficult. It's almost, I wrote to my friend in Kosovo, it's embarrassing to be a citizen of the wealthiest country the world has ever known and tell you that I have so little money to do my next project.
What did you do to survive? I mean, you have to have a place, a roof over your head and food. What did you find was the best way?
I'm married to an actor, and he has the same dilemma. As I say, a day job is always good. Teaching, and most writers, most artists, many of us teach or do something else to bring in a steadier income. And we spend a lot of time fundraising. I was, again, lucky when I was young. I had a couple of patrons who sort of discovered me and gave me money. It was easier government funding then, but you know, I still had patrons. My last play was funded by individuals basically and some foundations who wanted to see the play done. So you really have to be very clever and very persistent. I mean, I think that there's a some people, very few relatively, strike it rich in any profession in this country. But for the rest of us, it's a constant creative battle to see how you fund your art. And now there's a website called United States Artists. We're about to launch a campaign on United States Artists. It's a fundraising site. It's based in California, actually, in L.A. It's a fundraising site for artists who have achieved a certain amount of recognition, and you have to be vetted, and then you get on it. But basically, it's a fancier version of Kickstarter, which is another website that artists go to post their projects. A lot of them, if you go to Kickstarter or United States Artists, you see, we need finishing money for this film. We need rehearsal money for this play. We need, and so there's, you know, eminent artists on United States Artists, and also on Kickstarter. There are award-winning filmmakers, award-winning dancers and playwrights who are raising money through these venues. So one has to be extremely creative, persistent, and the work has to be a certain quality so that people want to fund it, and that's what you do.
And learn how to make a cocktail, flip burgers, and walk dogs.
You can't
be having an ego about it either, people, because that's going to put a hot dog in your mouth and a pretzel in your mouth, right? Get your damn ass out there and do some manual labor. Yeah. Now, people out here, Karen, they have, you know, some of, when they come from the East Coast, they've done that. They're used to doing the bartending, the waitressing. They have no problem with it. But people, it seems like, oh God, I'm going to get lots of emails about this. But it seems like if they are native people from LA, oh, it would just be the end of the earth if you have them reducing themselves to doing bartending and waitressing. They just want to start right out on a soap opera. You know,
there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that reality sometimes gets in the way. You know, and I mean, I'm an artist who's trying to change perception. So soap operas ain't my thing, if you will.
Right.
My art is about changing perception, and the plays that I selected to go in the book, Acts of War, Iraq and Afghanistan in 7 plays, are plays that are meant to change perception, meant to allow us to look at the world in a new way. And if you do that, you're even in a more difficult situation. If you do that, if you want to change perception, you're in the tradition of great art. I'm not saying any of us are great artists in this book, but I'm saying we're all in that tradition. We all admire and want and know that art can change perception. So we're not working for hire, none of us. If you want to be in a soap opera, you know, blessings upon you. And, you know, a lot of young people I've met say, well, first I want to make a lot of money and then I'll do my real work. But the problem with that is by the time you get to do your real work, A, you may not have made a lot of money. B, you might have made so much money that you can't really do your real work because you've forgotten what your real work is. So, you know, it's a kind of false notion that you will get discovered because you want to be discovered. We all would like to be discovered, but most of us have to work at it and create, and by work at it, I mean working at our craft, working at honing our own vision and our own style, our own way of working. And especially if you're a writer, if you don't have your own voice, then you're just for hire. And there are people, and there are some very skilled who work for hire. Nothing wrong with that, but it's a choice. Mm-hmm. It's a choice.
Now, let me ask you, what do you have an opinion on what educational path does one take in order to be the best playwright they can possibly be? I mean, you know how you hear actors
read.
What?
Read. I teach when I teach playwriting, I'm amazed at how few playwrights have ever read a play. Young people.
Oh, yeah.
Read, read and live. Two things that are very important. Read and live, also write, obviously. No, I mean, I'm a little bit leery. I mean, I went to Columbia Art School of the Arts, so I went to one of those fancy art schools. But that was, you know, 30 years ago, and they were cheaper then, although money was different then, too. But I'm very cautionary about telling young people to spend a lot of, to go into debt for their education. I believe in education, but I think I believe in self-education as much as I believe in school education. I think if you read, if you love to read, yes, you've got to educate yourself. You've been in an environment where people can hand down ideas and tell you what books to read. Basically, what you get from any good education is a reading list, and then you can go out and continue your education on your own. And that's true of actors, too. I mean, you have to know Stanislavski, you have to know Grotowski, you have to know Joe Chaykin, you have to know, you know, Lee Strasberg. You need to know what to look at, what to see, whose movies to rent. You need to know that, and a quick way to do that is to get a bunch of syllabuses from a bunch of professors who've been there, done that. So you do need, you know, you need that. But basically, your education is your own responsibility. And you have to self-educate.
And now, other than, I believe in that too, absolutely, you can't always expect that the professor or the teacher is going to know every single book or be able to give you
all the tools.
You got to do some research on your own. You got to visit the damn library or at least the internet these days. Now, other than possibly having the desire of winning a Tony, what is the most that one can hope for as a playwright at the end of their lifetime?
Well, you know, I don't think that being an artist is so separate from being a human being. So what is the most any of us can hope for at the end of our lifetime is that we've done some good to somebody else, not us. We've loved some people. We've enlightened some people. We've been enlightened by some others. We've done as little harm as we possibly can. Right now, we're living on an endangered planet, and so I think it's incumbent upon artists, again, to try to help us find ways to save the Earth that we're living on. What kind of lives do we need to begin to live to recognize? I mean, you guys are all out there on an earthquake fault, right?
We are too,
by the way.
The
nuclear plant most likely to blow in this country due to earthquake is Indian Point, which is 20 miles away from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all we have to do is look at the weather that we're experiencing even today, hailstorms, floods, forest fires, to know that this is a fragile planet that we live on. At the same time, we're busy making war. So, you know, my concern is how do you live a just life? And a just life is a life that is about giving to yourself, but certainly giving to others. So, you know, if you win a Tony in all of that, that's great. That's the icing on the cake and mazel tov. And
exactly.
But, you know?
It's like something happened on the way to the forum. I won a Tony. Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's great to win an award. It's great to win an award. I've never won a Tony, but, you know, plays of mine have won Obies. I've won, you know, different grants. It's wonderful and wonderful to have a little money in your pocket and have a little, you know, recognition. The most exciting time of being an artist is actually doing the work. It's the times you look back on. When we did Prophecy in New York last June, it was one of those extraordinary experiences. I had a great cast. I had people who have won Tonys, Kathleen Chalfant and Peter Francis James and George Bartenius. I had young people, Najla Said and Brendan Donaldson, talented, talented young people, a wonderful design team who I've worked with for 15 years. And the love and the creativity and the warm-hearted, good spirit that we did that play with meant that we were sold out every night. People stood and cheered. we did what we said we were going to do, which was work with care and commitment and in a collaborative way. That's what my theater is called. And theater, by the way, is, the English spelling is R-E and the American spelling is E-R.
So. Say that again. Let me absorb that. Do it again.
Theater. The English spelling is R-E. Theater.
See,
and the American spelling is E-R.
I've always spelled
that's,
it R-E.
That's the difference. That's the difference. That's fine.
I've and always they, done that. People are like, why do you spell it like that? I said, that's mm-hmm. the way it's supposed to be spelled.
Because you're a snob. That's, no.
Well, I don't know. My
There's no right or wrong. There's
right.
No, when we did the book Acts of War, we have three British plays in it written by British citizens, and one by an American, Naomi Wallace, who lives in London, and then three Americans, one of whom lives in Berlin. But anyway, there are tremendous spelling differences between English English and American English. So
now,
if you say humor, you in English English, you say H-U-M-O-U-R, right?
Exactly.
Right.
So, I'm very
those are all, you know, but we can read.
We can still read it. We can use ebonics and figure it out, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about you. We have about 10 minutes to go, and I want it to be all about you now. Enough about giving advice, tips, and resource information. Let's talk about Theater 3 Collaborative, which is your theater. Again, the website is theater3collaborative.org. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about the new book, Acts of War, Iraq and Afghanistan in 7 Plays. We want to talk about that. And also, there's a Los Angeles production, which we all want to hear about, of Prophecy. And also, we want to hear about the upcoming New York production of Another Life, which is about, I think, art and activism. So let's talk about that. It's exciting things.
Okay. Well, in order, in brief, let me.
Yeah.
Theater 3 Collaborative was founded 15 years ago by three artists. Lee Nagrin, who is no longer alive, unfortunately, who was a wonderful dance and movement artist. George Bartenev, my closest partner, and I. And we founded, George had founded Theater for the New City, which is an old established theater in New York that only did new plays. And he was producing 400, he was producing many, many new plays a year. But he's a great actor, and he wanted to step away from such intense producing in order to focus only on work that he wanted to do. And I had the good fortune, again, luck plays a part in everybody's life. I had the good fortune that he loved my plays, and I loved his acting. And Lee, we loved her work. So the three of us started Theater 3 Collaborative, and we produced a play called Beekeeper's Daughter, which we took to England first, and then to Italy first, and then to New York. And since then, we produce only work that we generate, as I said, and that we feel passionately about. So we did a production called I Will Bear Witness, which was a one-man show that George and I created from the diaries of Victor Klemperer. It's a Holocaust diary. It's an extraordinary diary. And we toured that all over the place, all over Europe and up and down the East Coast of the United States. And then we did Prophecy in London as a co-production and in New York. Now we're working, I've left out a few smaller productions, but I'm just hitting the big ones. Now we're working on a play called Another Life, which is actually a very surreal and probably our wildest. And I said the other day, Prophecy is a lovable play. Another Life is not a lovable play. Another Life is the story of what's happened to us in the last 10 years as in the United States. And it's partly the story of our torture program, the program that was initiated by the Bush administration to deal, quotes, terrorists, and legalize, quotes, enhanced interrogation techniques, i.e. torture. And I don't know how many people listening know that a lot of the reasons we went to war, quotes, reasons we went to war in Iraq, for instance, it was said that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, if you remember that, Saddam Hussein
uh-huh.
had weapons. That was a lie that was elicited under torture. And the person who finally confessed to knowing that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction was tortured so badly that he finally said that. And everybody knew this to be true, not just the people in the administration who repeated that lie, that he was called Al-Libi, the man Al-Libi, Sheikh Al-Libi. He's dead now. But many of us who had been following the story also knew that was a lie, and that was a lie that was elicited under torture. Another Life is a very surreal look at a lot of this, including the economic collapse of 2008. Because if you look at the last 10 years, you realize that one of the things we did immediately after September 2001, I live in New York, and I was very involved with the witnesses and survivors and rescuers of the attacks of September 11th. But one of the things we did is we began to spend money wildly, and the economy started to go into the housing bubble and all the bubbles that burst in 2008. So anyway, Another Life is a surreal, dreamlike, fantastical look at some of these issues that we've lived through together. And that's the play we'll be doing in the fall. It's the 10th year anniversary.
Where is it going to be? Where can we go and see that?
In the fall, it's going to be at John Jay College, the Gerald Lynch Theater, as part of a festival called 9/11 Play Series. There'll be four plays as part of that festival. Another Life, a student-created play, which I'm going to create with students. A play that's coming from Sarajevo and Kosovo called The Demolition of the Eiffel Tower, by a wonderful young playwright named Jetten Nezerich, and a play by Amy Green, which was written 10 years ago, which is a documentary about the immediate aftermath of the attack. So there are four plays that look in different ways at the legacy of the last 10 years and how we've experienced and lived through the last 10 years. And that'll be in September. And then we will do a longer run of Another Life at the Irondale Theater Center in Brooklyn, probably now in March.
March of 2012, of course, obviously. Yeah. And Nick, they can find about all of this information on Theater 3 Collective, theater3collective.org.
Theater3collaborative.org.
Oh, my God, I can't believe I said that. Well, it is a collective.
It has this long, funny name.
Theater3collaborative.org.
Yes, the other thing that I'm just really proud of that I just want to say is this wonderful book called Acts of War, Iraq and Afghanistan in 7 Plays. One of those plays is mine. 6 of those plays are by other amazing writers. I'm so proud of this book.
Where can we get it? We want to
anywhere. It's just been published.
Amazon.com.
Amazon.com. It's been selling out on Amazon.com. Okay. You can get it at a discount there. You can go into your local bookstore. It's at Barnes and Noble's. It's Northwestern University Press. And these are plays that really, each one of them is so strong. So powerful, sometimes funny, sometimes beautiful, by major playwrights, and each one of them takes is an important play, about, again, what we've lived through, and especially about what our troops have lived through. A lot of the plays focus on the cost of war to the people who've actually been fighting the war, and the cost of war to the democracy that we live in. But the plays are poetic, they're humorous, they're wild and wacky, strong, and really brilliant, I think. So I would encourage anybody who's interested in any of the things I've said tonight to run immediately and get that book.
Yes, The Acts of War. It's called Act of War. Acts of War, I Rock and Afghanistan. And you can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and it's 7 plays. And then lastly, let's talk. We got 1 minute. Let's get it in, Karen. We got to talk about Brad Mays. Is he going to still be directing Prophecy?
I love Brad Mays, and I wish I could say that was true. I don't know. He's overwhelmed. We hope that will happen. I don't have a date yet. I would love for him to do this play. I know he loves the play. It's not about the play. It's really about life getting in the way.
Right. I understand with the passing.
We're hoping that this can happen next year.
It's going to be, it's not coming up this year. It'll probably be more like next year.
It'll be next year. Yeah,
it'll definitely be in LA. So
it will be in LA. I hope Prophecy gets to LA. I think people in New York and London loved Prophecy, and I think in LA they would also love Prophecy.
Well, we are going to make sure that we announce it. So will you promise that you come back and talk to us about Prophecy when you're ready to do it?
I would love to.
And we want to talk more about you being a peace activist. We want to let it all hang out the next time you come out. I'm going to give you a pulpit. You're going to be on the apple cart. We're going to stir it up next time, Karen,
okay.
For sure.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Karen. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. This is Karen Malpede. Go to her website, theater3collaborative.org. Thank you, Karen. God bless you. Say goodbye
thank
to your
you.
Listeners.
Thank you, Priscilla, and everybody out there. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.